session number 13670, reel 5.
Guns, reel 5.
The snipers are obviously looking for officers in particular. We'd had a Major Kars, who had previously commanded the divisional battle school where I'd met him, posted to us a short while before. He was killed on the Corduroy Road. And Major Peter Watson, who'd taken over A Company after Spook Harwood had been killed on the beach, so he had a long innings, he was killed as well. And one or two of our junior officers too. And the tank crews actually forced their way through onto Udon Wees Road, but were then picked off by the German handheld anti-tank weapons. They managed, the crews managed to struggle back, bringing their wounded tank commander with them. So it wasn't until the next day that we reached the Udon Wees Road, by which time German pressure had relaxed. And the same thing happened to our division as had happened in the approach to Falaise. With divisions coming from all directions towards the Rhine, we were again blocked out. And it wasn't until the 13th of March that we moved forward and occupied an area of the west bank of the Rhine between two small villages called Whistle and Krieth near Ries. And there was quite a steep bank to the Rhine there. It seemed very wide, at least half a mile, if not more. It was very swollen, running very strongly with dark brown muddy water. On the top of this bank on our side was a road that ran parallel to the river, and we could see the German positions. Now, our instructions were that we weren't to engage the enemy unless absolutely necessary. We would try and locate as many of the German artillery and mortar positions as possible so that when the assault across the Rhine came, counter-battery work could be directed against them. There were again two amusing incidents there. We had a sort of boathouse right down on the river's edge in our area. It was two-storied, and this was a good place to put a standing patrol to observe the enemy the other side. The troops in this upper story heard movement on the ground floor, and they thought they were a German patrol that had come across, so they crept quietly down and found an enormous sow rooting about, and they tried to shoo it off, whereupon it immediately launched an attack and drove them back upstairs. The other story concerns a goose. Neville Chance, who remember had been wounded on the Veer to Tantibay Road, had come back to us and was in command of support company, and I'd gone along to see how they were. And it was a lovely sunny Sunday morning, and we were walking along this road on the top of the bank, and there was a ditch on the side away from the river, and there was a peculiar sort of white thing bobbing along, and we looked and we realised that it was a goose walking along the ditch with only its head visible. And I said to Neville, "I bet you can't hit that." Neville, I might mention, was abysmally shot, and he had an American rifle that he'd picked up from the 82nd Airborne somewhere. So he said, "I bet you can." So he fired one shot and hit the goose absolutely in the middle of its head. And immediately on the German bank, everything possible opened up. Mortars, artillery, machine guns, and the lot. And Neville and I dived in the ditch, roaring our heads off, wondering what on earth we'd done with one shot to provoke this. But of course it was very much to our advantage, because all the troops along the back were able to locate the position of the enemy guns that were firing. on the 23rd of March, while we held the bank, the Rhine crossing took place, but we ourselves didn't cross until the 29th. And we're now entering on an entirely different type of warfare. Where before we'd been advancing sometimes only yards, and if we're lucky, a few hundred yards, we're now moving rapidly, doing sometimes 100 miles of movement. The Div Recce regiment, for example, was coming into its own, and the tank regiments were really able to operate as they were designed, with speed and movement. We kept crossing and recrossing the Dutch-German border here, which weaves about. We went through a series of towns, Groenlo, Enschede, and we were held up temporarily at Lingen, where it was protected by both a canal and the River Ems, and had been a garrison town. The other problem, just as we were able to move rapidly, so the German movements were quite unpredictable. We'd get small columns of tanks and armoured vehicles coming from almost any direction, sometimes from behind us, sometimes from right or left. It was quite disconcerting. But we too, I suppose, in a way, we attacked Lingen from entirely the opposite direction, the northeast, which I think was the, having found a bridge to cross the river, we attacked from entirely the unexpected direction and took Lingen quite easily. And I remember there was a railway engine with full steam up there, and the second in command there were very disappointed where we couldn't get it going. So we'd not fulfilled yet that childhood desire to drive a railway engine. There was another episode about now, which was a strange one. We were advancing, and it was a huge field, such as you get on the continent, the enormous field, and in the middle of it was a lone farmhouse. And from this farmhouse came both artillery and heavy machine gun fire, and it was completely open, and the CO decided that he'd suffered a lot of casualties trying to attack this place across open country, so he called on a medium regiment we had in support to fire on this, and it took them 400 rounds before they hit it. And that may sound a lot, but in fact the beaten zone at the range that we're firing is about 200 yards long and several yards wide, and any shot which lands in there is considered to be on target. But it needed 400 round action to hit it, and the firing ceased. And when we moved cautiously forward and occupied, we found that what had happened was a Panther tank had approached from the rear, gone through the rear wall, and then it sunk down into the cellar, so it was in a marvellous pull-down position, both to fire its gun and its machine guns as well. In the cellar, we found the farmer's wife, who was having a baby, and the medical officer came up and assisted her with the birth, and then assured her that she could stay there and be all right, but she wasn't having any. She wrapped the baby in a blanket and disappeared across the field. We then...
Was she Dutch or German?
German. We then moved on, Wildershausen, Harlingen Road, and here, another of these hazards. The roads, of course, hadn't been cleared of mines, and if you attempted a short cut, you took your life in your hands. And Major Clegg, again, one of the original D-Day officers, and Colonel Waller, who by now commanded the battalion, were blown up on a mine. Both were injured, but not badly, but at least they were not capable of remaining with us. And we then went on to Delmenhorst, where we're joined by our new CO, Tubby Butler, who had been with the battalion at Dunkirk, and came back as a lieutenant colonel. He'd already got an MC and a DSO, and he joined us just as the fighting was coming to an end. The last town or city was Bremen, and Bremen, as you probably know, had been subjected to a considerable number of attacks by Bomber Command, and they had established contact with the local telephone line. They were trying to negotiate for the surrender of the town, but these broke down. So they brought in another heavy bomber raid with several hundred bombers, and we watched from some distance away. It was really an appalling sight. Huge clouds of dust went up and enveloped the whole target, with occasional huge fountains of water when they landed in the river. And as a result of this, we moved in to Bremen almost unopposed. And the town was completely devastated. It was very difficult to find a building in which to set up our battalion headquarters. Eventually we picked on the gasworks. This had been a multi-story building built in ferro concrete, so the ground floor was still more or less intact. We occupied that. And we were there when the war came to an end, quite suddenly it seemed. And so we'd had 11 months of fighting from our landing till then.
Did you see any of the concentration camps in Germany?
No. We went for a very brief period of occupation near Paderborn. But then they had plans to form a corps with one British division, 3 Div, one American and one Canadian, to do an assault landing on the mainland of Japan. And we were brought back to prepare for this. Then, following the dropping of the two atomic bombs, the Japanese surrendered. So I'm glad. I think one assault landing in a lifetime is sufficient. So then they sent us first of all to Moasca in the canal zone in Egypt. I went out there as adjutant then. There was trouble in Egypt, if you remember. And then they sent us to Haifa in Palestine. There was problem, remember, over excessive Jewish immigration over the quota we'd agreed.
What did you see of the trouble in Egypt at Moasca?
Nothing at all, really. We're just there as a standby force. And similarly, not really very much in Palestine. Basically, compared with the casualties we'd suffered, the odd person who was killed by terrorists or snipers was very small.
Were you on duty against the illegal immigrants?
The idea, yes, was to... It was a little like the situation in Northern Ireland. In other words, we were patrolling and there were occasional outrages, but very little. And then they moved us back to Egypt, to roughly the same area. And then I got a Class B release to go back to the university to complete my training as a teacher. That was in order to start in September 46 at the Institute of Education, London.
What condition were you in at the end of the Northwest Europe campaign, personally, physical and mental?
I was very fit, not perhaps as fit as we'd started, because, strange though it may seem, on training, you are much more active and have to act more energetically than you do in action. There are long periods when you're relatively static in defence. Physically, I think I'd recovered by then, because the worst fighting was over as far as the battalion was concerned by the time we'd come to the end of Goodwood. And of course, as I pointed out, although my move as intelligence officer meant that I frequently went forward with the commanding officer, even in front of the attacking troops, by and large, you were not in constant contact. You were just that few hundred yards further back with a company in position in front of you. So it was relatively relaxed compared with being in constant contact with the enemy.
What feelings did it leave you with as regarding war?
Well, I think the Hitler's war was essential. I think Hitler had to be removed and Europe liberated. If war can be avoided, it should be. For example, I think the Falklands campaign, with better diplomatic approach, could have been avoided. I think if you can avoid having a war, so much the better.
And I get the impression that you suffered neither wound nor sickness during the campaign.
No, that's quite correct. I illustrated one or two. There were numerous incidents in which I would be with a group of people and owing to shelling or fire, all but myself would be killed or wounded. But as I say, it's just a question of luck.